Good afternoon. Welcome to A Look at the Arts. I'm Tom Lounges. And as I mentioned prior to the news, we've got a very special guest in studio with us, Charlie Gorick-Smith. She is and was Miss Indiana 1964. She's done numerous television and film appearances over the years, hit TV shows we all grew up watching, like Flying Nun, The Monkees, Wild Wild West, Gunsmoke, and of course, she starred in a lot of famous movies of the pop culture era of the 60s, Elvis Presley films like Spin Out, Speedway, Paradise Hawaiian Style, and she's going to be a judge at the Elvis Fantasy Fest. She'll be judging the Ultimate Elvis Tribute Contest and sending somebody to Graceland in Memphis to compete for the world title. And without any further ado, let's play something from one of the other movies she was in. This is the title track with Clambake.
Hey! All right.
Mama's little baby loves Clambake, Clambake. Mama's little baby loves Clambake too. Mama's little baby loves Clambake, Clambake. Mama's little baby loves Clambake too. Hey, listen, world, you gotta know. Clambake. I'm cutting loose and letting go. Who needs the worry and the strife? Life can be a ball, I'll just ball away my life. Clambake, gonna have a clambake. Clambake, gonna have a clambake. Look for the brightest lights in town. That's where you'll find me hanging round. I got this feeling to be free. I'll pick and choose the life I want, and that's a life for me. Clambake, gonna have a clambake. Clambake, gonna have a clambake. For the brightest lights in town, that's where you'll find me hanging around. I got this feeling to be free. I'll pick and choose the life I want, and that's the life for me. Clambake, gonna have a clambake. Hey, clambake, gonna have a clambake.
Mama's little baby loves clambake, clambake. Mama's little baby loves clambake. Mama's little baby loves clambake, clambake. Mama's little baby loves clambake.
Clambake,
gonna have clambake. Mama's little baby loves clambake, clambake. Mama's little baby loves clambake. Mama's little baby loves clambake, 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 clambake. Mama's little baby loves clambake too.
Charlie, you have quite a life.
I have. Every dream I've had has come true. I'm very, very, very blessed.
Now, you were class of 61 at Maryville High School.
Maryville High School,
but you went
right to
Lew Wallace for a while.
I did go to Lew Wallace, and then my family moved out here to Maryville. We lived in Chapel Hill, and I became Miss Indiana, and then I was actually lucky enough to go out to California to compete for the finals in the Miss International Beauty Pageant.
How stressful is that? I mean, I've never really met a beauty queen, so how stressful is it to compete in something like that where everybody's just looking at you?
You know, Tom, it's funny because today when I look at some of the contestants in the Miss America pageant or the other pageants, I almost feel sorry for them. I was in an era that we didn't have to have, you know, $5,000 gowns and all this fancy preparations. We went out there and we did the best we could.
Mm-hmm.
But today the girls are really, really schooled, and they have to go to classes for etiquette and for walking properly, for the dresses, you know. I mean, it's amazing what the girls go through today. So I was in an era really where we just went out and we were ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And the scrutiny of their personal life, going back to when they were like in the cradle still. I mean, gosh,
yes,
you do something wrong and it all comes out, especially in today's internet world.
Yes, and that's sad. And the questions that they ask are so much more difficult. And I don't care how a girl has prepared some of the questions that are thrown at her, I don't feel she has the right, you know, she expresses her opinion, but there's always going to be people that like her opinion and that are going to be against her opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And it can count against her. And we just had general questions when I was running for different titles back then.
What made you want to do that? And how did you go from Maryville to the basically the Queen of Indiana?
Thank you. My mother. My mom was really, really a stage mother.
Okay.
And I modeled actually since I was 3 years old. And I was in Chicago. I was the Chicago Shirley Temple. And my mother continued to push me. And I was not ready for any of that. And I grew up, you know, being happy living in Indiana. And when I was Junior Miss Indiana, I remember they had a parade for me here in Miraville. And to show you how crazy I was at the time, I had this beautiful long gown on and I was on the back of a beautiful convertible. And I see a friend of mine from school riding her horse in the parade. So guess what? I said, well, Pat, can I have a ride on the horse? She said, well, if you didn't have your formal, you could. I said, doesn't stop me. I jumped on, and of course, my mother about fainted, and away we went with the gown and the horse kicking up the heels.
Oh, wow.
And people were just, I can't believe her. And I said, that's me, though.
Wow. That's a great story. Now, 64. Well, you were Junior Miss first in 61, 62?
61.
So you were still a senior at that point or just graduated?
No, I was actually a junior.
Okay.
And I went down to Bluffton, Indiana. I became Junior Miss Indiana. And then Bluffton officials were really upset because the Junior Miss America was actually only for senior high school girls, and I wasn't a senior. So they actually sent my first runner-up, which I was very disappointed. But she did very, very good. And, you know, I continued my career with the other titles.
And then, of course, 64, Miss Indiana.
Miss Indiana, right.
And that took you to L.A.?
That took me to Long Beach, where I
competed.
Oh,
Long Beach, mm-hmm. Okay.
And one of the judges was Joe Pasternak. Well, Joe Pasternak was the producer of the Elvis movies, and so I really was impressed. So he said, well, if I come back to my state, which the law says in your contract, and I came back to California, he would see what he could do to get me film roles.
So you had to come back to Indiana.
I had to.
And then mm-hmm. once the competition was over and the pageant stuff was done, you got to go back.
Correct,
okay.
Correct. And that year, Miss California won the United States portion, and then the international title was by Miss Philippines. Beautiful girl. Beautiful girl.
Wow. So how long of a period from the time you were in the competition to when you went back to L.A. to live?
Probably about 3 months.
Okay.
It wasn't very long. And then what made matters worse, can you believe this? I took a horse with me to California. And my father about had a heart attack. He said, are you crazy? And just to show you how determined I was to go out there because Elvis was out there, I had $300 in my pocket and that was it. And I was going with a horse. And my dad said, you've lost your mind for sure.
Do you still have horses?
I still have horses.
We have a Clydesdale.
Do you really?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a Tennessee Walker and I have a miniature pony. I have chickens, 2 dogs, and I did have a few cows this summer.
We had a goat at one time.
Uh-huh.
But the goat is living off property now, as is the Clydesdale.
I love it.
But so you went down there and you started hobnobbing with a bunch of famous folks. And at some point, you crossed paths with the Dave Clark Five.
I actually lived at a place called the Hollywood Studio Club. That was a residence for girls that were either involved in TV or in film work.
Didn't Marilyn Monroe stay there?
Yes, she did.
I do remember
yes,
that.
Yes, she did.
Okay.
Right. It was on Lodi. It was right by the Columbia Studios. And you had to be working in the entertainment business in order to stay there. So they would give you for $25 a week your breakfast and your dinner. For lunch, you better be out there working.
Mm-hmm.
And then they provided you also with your phone service. So it was a great deal for $25.
Yeah, I can't
so
beat
my
that.
Mother, of course, said, that's where you're going. You're not, you know, going out there just crazy. You're going to the, what we call the girls YWCA. So I went out there and one afternoon, one of the girls came up and said, listen, I have a friend and I think you need a publicist. and it's time in your career that you get one. So I was listening to her, and I said, all right. She said, well, I'll fix you up with him, a blind date. I said, okay. So I went out with this fellow, and he said, well, we'll go to a concert. And I said, okay. I had never, ever been to a concert. And we went to this concert in Anaheim, which is about 60 miles south of L.A. And he says, well, would you like to meet the group? And I said, well, who are they? And he said, oh, it's a British group named the Dave Clark Five. And I said, never heard of them. Okay. So he takes me backstage, and whoa, my buttons popped when I saw this gorgeous man come out. He was unbelievable. And he introduced me, and it was quite a funny story because during the concert, I just kept my eyes riveted on Mike. He was just dazzling. And being from Indiana, I had never seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite exciting. And then afterwards, we went for a drink at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And when my blind date went to the men's room, Mike said, well, would you like to go out? And I said, I'd love to. So he said, okay, I'll knock you up in the morning. And I went, what? Excuse me. I'm not that kind of a girl. And he said, well, why? And I said, I don't want to be knocked up in the morning. Excuse me. And he just, I said, I thought we were having a nice time. I said, you English are really rude. Well, he meant he was going to call me in the morning.
Okay.
So we settled
I've
that
never
real quick.
Heard that term.
That's
I've
that
heard ring you up, but never knock you up.
He was going to knock me up in the morning.
Well, of course, the story continues, and we're going to get to the bright side of that story and the continuing love story with Mike Smith, a beautiful man, and now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But let's go back to the Dave Clark Five and a song that I'm sure they played that day, and a song that kind of sums up what I'll bet Charlie was feeling. She was, in fact, glad all over.
You say that you love me.
Five, Dave Clark Five, one of the best British invasion bands ever. In fact, they gave the Beatles a run for their money. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Dave Clark Five appeared on Ed Sullivan more than any other British band.
That is correct. And
People always think the Stones, the Beatles, the Stones, the Beatles. No. But the Dave Clark Five were actually the big rivals of the Beatles before the Stones.
Right. And Ed Sullivan had the Stones on one time and said that they were so rude he'd never have them back. And he continued to have the Dave Clark Five on, and they still hold the record for the most performances ever.
Wow. And, of course, singing lead for the Dave Clark Five on most of the songs was Mike Smith. He was the keyboard player. He was a big part of the song arranging and production later on. And my guest, Charlie Gorick Smith, the Smith, comes from Mike Smith. She fortunately married him, but that's years later. So we'll pick that story up in just a bit because it's a great romance story. But you are in Hollywood. You are working... living in this YMCA for women that all these starlets stay in, where does the story go from here? How did you wind up working in some of these great pop culture films like the four Elvis movies, the Batman movie? I definitely want to hear about that.
Okay. I had to audition just like anybody else. And roles were difficult to get. And so I had really good agents. I was doing commercials. I was doing print work. And I would do anything. I had to feed the horse. My rent was $25, but the horse had to be fed.
Right.
So someone said to me, well, why don't you go and audition for some of the Elvis films? I said, oh, my gosh, I'd love to do that. So, okay, I got selected, and I started being one of the dancers on the show. And I loved being next to Elvis because during lunch breaks we would sit and we would talk and everything. And he was the greatest, nicest man. And I just really, really had a bond with him. He asked if I'd like to go out and I said no. And he looked at me and I said, because I'd rather be your friend than a lover. I said, the girls are coming in and out like a swinging door. I said, but your friends will stay with you forever. And he said, that's true, kid, you're right.
Wow.
So I became his friends, and I was friends with Elvis for a long, long, long time.
Now, there was always so many girls around Elvis.
Always.
How did he ever sleep?
Very lightly. I mean, when you saw Elvis, I mean, you look at his pictures and you see him on TV, his charisma is magnetic. I have never, ever met anyone that has that kind of charisma. And Elvis, for some reason, the minute women saw him, I mean, they took their clothes off. It was just that way. And he was a Southern boy, you know, and he was a gentleman, luckily. But everybody wanted to be with Elvis, and it was just that charisma and that Southern charm that got to people.
Did the other girls think you were crazy? Then you said, no, I just want to be your friend?
Yes, they thought I was. But at the same time, even into the late 80s, I was able to still say I kept my head up, and I was his friend till the end when he passed away in the 70s. So I feel good about it. And a few years back, I ran into Joe Esposito at one of the Elvis Fests, and I looked and I said, Joe, what are you doing in Portage, Indiana? And he said, Charlie, what are you doing here?
I was there too.
Were you there?
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Yes, a couple years ago, right. And so we just laughed and we hugged. But, you know, I really felt fortunate. They let me bring a camera on the set. And I was able to have pictures taken with Elvis and all the fellas, and that nobody was ever allowed to do that. So that's special for me.
Right.
You know, and I still have those pictures. I promised them, you know, that I wasn't going to sell them to the papers and things like that. And I never did until after Elvis passed away. I did show a few of the pictures. But I have pictures of Joe and Sonny and Red and Elvis's car and all of that. Wow. So those were good moments.
I've actually got a picture of me with a spin-out car.
Back in
88, I hired Jimmy Velvet's Traveling Museum when I was producing a show that was Elvis-based with the Jordanaires and all these impersonators.
Right.
And we brought the spin-out car. And I remember leaning on the car and getting a picture, and then some guard came out and started yelling at me.
Don't dare touch
it. Don't you dare touch the car.
Exactly.
I'm like, okay.
Exactly. It was gold. It was gold.
That was crazy.
Have you gone through Graceland yet?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Very, very, very special.
If you love Elvis even a little bit, you have to go to Graceland.
Have to go. It's such a tribute to a great, great man.
Speaking of Graceland, every year, Kay Lipps and her late husband, Paul, would put on the Elvis Fantasy Fest. They are now in their 24th year. Kay is back full steam ahead, doing this on her own now with a little help from Omar Farag and Omar Presents, as I understand. You are going to be judging the, I guess you want to say the wannabe future kings.
They're, that's right.
It's an army, a legion of Elvis impersonators out there, and they all descend on Portage, one of the many cities that does this ultimate Elvis tribute contest. And then we will pick one winner over the 2 days, and that winner will go down to Memphis at Graceland for Elvis Week and compete to become the ultimate Elvis of that year. I've been going to this for years. I've known Kay for a long time and been involved in a lot of the Elvis world over the years as a journalist and a radio host. But it's interesting because this year Kay said, would you mind judging? You've got a lot of Elvis background. You've met, you know, I've interviewed him from Lisa Marie to Joe Esposito to Al DeVorn and now you. And she's like, yeah, you've got some history and you know Elvis. Would you be a judge? And I'm like, sure. So I've invited my friend Billy Shelton, who's the bass singer of the Spaniels, who also performs Elvis in that very deep tone.
Oh, love it.
And he's going to be judging, and I found out you're judging. And now, you know, we've got Donnie coming in, Donnie Sumner from
Isn't
the Stamps
exciting?
Quartet. So four of the six judges, I know who it is. I don't know who the other two are.
I don't know.
This will be fun.
I know that, excuse me, I know there's going to be, according to what I was told last night by Kay, 21 entries.
Wow.
And they're coming in from as far as Washington, Texas, the Carolinas, Tennessee. So we're going to have a really, really good turnout.
And a hard job.
Yeah. If anybody likes Elvis, this is the place to be next weekend.
And the thing is, like I said, 24 years this has been going on. It's the Elvis Fantasy Fest. It's at the Woodland Community Plaza. It's a beautiful little room in Portage, and everything that's made there goes to help the Special Olympics kids of Portage, Indiana.
That's a great cause. Because Elvis was such a giver.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they're doing. They're going to contribute all the proceeds to that.
Well, Kay is a big fan. Her and Paul were both fans from what I understand talking with her. And she's collected 7 scarves and kisses from Elvis.
Wow.
She probably has you beat.
I have a funny story about a scarf I'll have to share with you.
Okay. But, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And, again, that's next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So it's a week from today it starts, and then the competition is on Saturday and Sunday. There's a gospel brunch on Sunday at 10 o'clock, I believe, and it's going to have Donnie Sumner and the Spaniels performing Elvis's gospel music.
Wow.
And it'll be a brunch, and it's, again, all the proceeds helping out. You can get all the information at ElvisFantasyFest.com. Next Friday, in fact, a week from today, we're going to have Donnie Sumner and Caleb's in the studio with us, and you're more than welcome to come back.
Oh, fabulous.
So
fabulous.
We're going to be in here, and we're going to talk more about this, and Donnie's going to tell some stories of actually working with Elvis, and he was on the Aloha special. The first ever satellite broadcast in the world.
Oh, gosh.
So he's got some great stories, and I talked with him earlier this week, and I said, you got to tell that story, and you got to tell that story, and you got to tell that story. So we're going to have some storytelling next week.
Good, good.
But aside from the Elvis movies, well, you did a lot of other stuff. Like I said, you did the Dr. Goldfoot and the Bikini Machine. At first, I thought it was like How to Stuff a Wild Bikini. And I'm like, no, it was a different one. There were so many bikini movies
in
the 60s.
I know. I was very fortunate. Like I said, I had a horse to keep me grounded and that had to eat. And so I would take all these roles in that. But I did a lot of different films with American International. They sent me out on tour a few times. And they were always fun. I got to work with Frankie Avalon, Annette, and my hero, Vincent Price. He was fabulous. And then I did Wild Wild West. I did a lot of the Bob Hope shows.
You wore green makeup in that, didn't you?
On one of the segments, yes, I did.
I saw a picture of that online, and it's like, she's green.
Right.
Is she sick?
Yes, yes. No, and you know what? That was so funny, because here we had we were supposed to be girls from space, and we wanted the gold from the Wild West people to get our spaceship back up into space. So we finished filming for the day, and I get in my car and go home and go to the grocery store, and people are looking at me like, is there something wrong with you? And I'm thinking, well, what's wrong with you? Why are you staring at me that way? I forgot I had the green makeup on.
Oh, wow. Well, you played a genie in The Monkees.
Genie and the Monkees, uh-huh.
I actually have that picture here.
Oh, my gosh.
Of you as the genie. And you've done some amazing stuff. Now, in Batman, what did you do? You were a bikini dancer?
I think I was a bikini dancer. To be honest with you, I really don't remember, Tom. Those years went by so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I was working with the USO. I don't know if you know that part.
I did not know that.
Yes, and I was working on the Bob Hope shows, and I was asked to go, actually, to Vietnam with Bob Hope. And I said, well, you know, I'm working with USO and a fellow by the name of Johnny Grant. He was doing Armed Forces Radio at the time. And I said, Johnny's tour will be to all the hospital bases and to all of the troops, where Bob, your tour only goes to the big bases. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll go with Johnny instead. He said, don't worry, go for it. So I did. So that really took up a lot of time, and I loved it. We went over to Vietnam for 3 weeks, almost got shot down a couple times.
Wow.
But I earned a respect for those men in the military that to this day, if I see a soldier, I will always say thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for serving. And I still have, would you believe, the hat that I had. I was given all the badges from the different troops that we visited, and I still have that hat.
Wow.
It's very, very special to me. So during that time, things were passing by so quickly, and I was fortunate enough to be working on the Hope shows. Then he asked me to go to Houston with him to be Miss American Fighter Pilot. So I went with him and Ernest Gann and a bunch of them, and that was really fun to do. And, you know, I was just really enjoying life at the time.
Did you get to go in the cockpit and fly
yes.
around?
Yes. Well, I got to go in the cockpit.
Okay.
But when they said, well, you hit the G's and all of that, I said, I don't think so. But
here's your brown paper bag.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll share a funny story, because I don't share this very often. But Wally Schirrer, one of our top astronauts, was a dear friend of ours. And when my son was born, he couldn't wait to see him. And unfortunately, he was in space. So at the time, right before my son was born, Wally came out to the house, and I made him a member of the Turtle Club, which was a drinking club in Beverly Hills at the time. Okay. And you had to have a very special password for that. Okay. So my son is born. Wally comes back off of his space mission, comes to the house, says, I can't wait to see the baby. So he's about at least 12 feet from me. So I come out carrying and swaddling this baby in my arms. And I said, well, then here. And I throw the baby clear across the room, and he drops it. He goes, oh, my God. And he falls to the floor. Well, it was a doll. Well, he said, you know, I've been to space and back, but I never had this feeling. I thought I killed your child.
You're a prankster.
Oh, I'm a real prankster.
I got to remember that.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend some time with you next weekend. Oh, man. Now, you did the Elvis films. We talked about some of the other stuff. One that's in particular, if you go online and you Google you, there's very few pictures. Like you said, you're very kind of under the radar and very private. But there is one, and it's a favorite of mine, actually.
Uh-oh.
I know I got it.
I'm afraid to even look. Oh, my gosh. That's
look at that. That is from Winter A Go-Go. It's you in like a little mini elfie-type costume holding skis,
yes,
wearing fishnets.
That was a film from Columbia Studios. And where are you finding these? Oh, I wish the listeners would be shocked, because I'm shocked over here. Yes, those were some of my crazy fun days back in Hollywood. It was a great time. You know, Hollywood was so much fun then. Again, you didn't have quite the pressure that mm-hmm. the stars do now today. And I never really wanted to be a star. I just wanted to be next to Elvis.
And you were.
And I was.
You were a confidant. Getting back to Elvis real quick. What you were talking about, how you would sit and talk. Did he do that a lot with his cast? Was he that accessible?
Most of the time, when Elvis and I would sit and talk, it would be on a lunch break. And everybody would break for lunch. And I usually just wasn't even hungry. And so we would sit, and he'd come out of his trailer, and we would just sit and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very, very polite. I just found him to be a real genuine person. He was into religion. He wanted to know a lot about religion. He was very, very serious about his music. He was very serious about his career. And we would just sit and talk. And it was a beautiful friendship that revolved from that.
And you were in films with him. Again, Paradise Hawaiian Style, which had to be great to go to Hawaii with Elvis. Speedway and a Spin Out.
When a motor's warm and she's purring sweet, buddy, let me warn ya, you're on a one-way street. She'll crowd you close, spin your wheels, then you're gonna know how it feels to spin out. Yeah, spin out. Better watch those curves, never let her steer. If she can shake your nerves, boy, she can strip your gears. She'll get your heart going fast, then she'll let you run out of gas. So spin out, yeah, spin out. She's out to prove she can really score. Never saw parts move or like that before. To flag you down, that's her goal. Scoot before you lose control. Let's spin out. Let's spin out. Never saw parts move like that before. To flag you down, that's a goal. Scoot before you lose control. Let's spin out. Hey, 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 hey. Let's spin out. Let me hear you spin out.
This is A Look at the Arts. I'm Tom Lounges, and we are looking at the arts today with Charlie Gorick-Smith. Was and is forever Miss Indiana 1964. She's been doing television and film over the years, and as we mentioned, some of the shows she's been on, Wild Wild West, The Monkees, you were on Gunsmoke. You worked with Red Skelton.
Yes, I did a lot of Red Skelton shows.
He's a Hoosier boy.
Yes,
from Winston.
Wonderful, wonderful man.
I had a chance to work with him once.
Isn't he beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
He, after every show, he would come to each one of us and say, God bless you, thank you for being on my show, and go to each person and say that. And I thought, wow, that is a man that's got talent and humility.
Yes.
Very impressive.
I did a press conference when he was doing a performance, and at that time I was a single dad, so I had my 3 or 4 year old daughter Sarah with me, who's gone into theater and all the other things now. She's an entertainer, but she was sitting there, and she was such a great child. I could never have asked. She was like a church mouse. She'd sit there with her little legs crossed, and she'd listen. She did Tom Jones, all these different press conferences, and they always complimented her. But Red, he had that cigar in his mouth that he never lit. And he was chewing on his cigar. We did this hour or more press conference. And at the end, everybody's leaving. And he says, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. He goes, who's that little angel belong to? And I said, that would be me. And first I'm thinking, gosh, maybe I shouldn't have brought her. But, you know, I'd have no choice. He goes, bring her on up here. He goes, this is the perfect child. And I got a picture of him holding her. And he gave her a kiss.
Beautiful.
And he just stood and talked to her forever. He goes, hi, honey, you know, did you like today? And she's like, no, it was boring. <You know? laughs> And he's like, do you like clowns? And he sketched a little clown on a napkin.
He was quite an artist.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was a very nice man.
To take the time
to pick out a little girl of a press guy and then be so personal with her.
Yes.
And I'd heard that about Elvis, too, from people I know, that he would just find somebody and just go talk to him.
Mm-hmm. He did. He had a heart. I don't think that the entertainers today can even come close to Elvis's humility, his sense of style. Elvis was an individual that I think we were very, very fortunate to know and to have in our lifetime, because I don't think there'll ever be another Elvis in our life.
Mm-hmm.
But who really are our heroes today? Do we have any? I mean, I pick up the paper and I see the sport figures and they're being arrested for this, that, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't read that about Elvis. You didn't see that he was doing all these nasty things and drugs and everything else.
And you also didn't hear about the good things either, because he was so humble.
Exactly.
He didn't want the credit. I know when he died, there was one of the reasons I got into music and doing what I'm doing is because of Elvis. My sisters were class of 66 and 65, and they would hide me in the trunk, and we'd go to Ridge Drive-In, and we'd watch Elvis movies, and you know, they kind of raised me. So I got steeped in the 60s thing. But when my friends, I was graduating in the 70s, my friends were all into Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin. They couldn't understand, why are you buying this King Creole album? What is that all about? You know, I wish you were here. So I was always kind of the outcast, musically speaking. But when Elvis died, there was a really bad rebuttal that someone had written to the Times about why does anyone care about this bloated ex-teen idol, blah, blah, blah. So I wrote this scathing thing back, and it was like an epic. It was
good
like Moby Dick.
And
I explained how Elvis was the first celebrity to endorse Salk vaccine and that so many of us are walking today because of him.
That's right.
I talked about the USS Arizona, how he funded almost all the money
from
with that
Aloha
concert.
In Hawaii.
And we have this beautiful monument at Pearl Harbor. And I talked about all these different things and how he would take funds and he would pay for the milk for the underprivileged kids in Memphis so the kids could have school, you know, milk in school.
Right.
All these things that nobody really knew about unless you really dug or knew someone that knew him. Mm-hmm. And it wound up getting so much response as a letter to the editors that I was hired eventually to become a music columnist with the Times, which I still do today.
That's
so
beautiful.
Elvis led me to this place in life.
Isn't that amazing?
Through osmosis. I never got to meet the man. I've since interviewed Lisa Marie. I've met almost all the guys in the Elvis, you know, Memphis Mafia. All that over the years. And it's just been a wonderful ride going down there. I covered his death the year he died. I went down to Memphis for the first time with that insanity going on.
Very, very sad.
But it was just something else. And to be able to talk to people that actually was in that presence. Mm-hmm. And I keep hearing that it was like an aura around him that you just couldn't help but be drawn to him like a moth to a light.
Yes. I'll share a real funny story with you. I was working in one of the sets with him, and it was on the movie Spin Out. And during lunch hour that day, he had started playing some music for me, and he was singing to me during our lunch break.
Wow.
And I was the only one on set, just him and I. And it just hit home, and I started to cry. Well, oh my gosh, blubbering me, couldn't stop crying. So now it's time to go back and film. And the scene is supposed to be where Elvis comes over and a girl by the name of Thordis Brant and I are sitting there, and he's supposed to come over and kiss each one of us. Little kiss here, little kiss there. Well, I'm still blubbering and crying during rehearsal. And the director says, well, what did he do to you? What's wrong? I said, nothing, nothing, nothing. So I'm okay, I'm okay. So I'm trying to control myself. He comes over and he purposely trips over me and falls in my lap. And he goes, see, I'm falling for you, kid. And I just broke out laughing. But that was Elvis.
Wow.
That was Elvis. Isn't that a neat story?
That is.
And that'll stay always in my heart. He wanted me to laugh, and I did. So I said, thank you, King.
60s came and went. You did, as we mentioned, a lot of television, a lot of films. And the 70s came along, and you fell in love with one of the greatest prize fighters of all time.
Yes, Jerry Corey.
Jerry Corey, the Great White Hope, as we called him back then.
Great White Hope, right.
And he took on Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali. He fought them all.
Ron Lyle, he was a great, great fighter, but he never got the title, unfortunately. He was smaller than any of those guys. Those guys were huge next to him. And unfortunately, Jerry was a tough, tough fighter.
He's an old Irish fighter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. But he just wasn't tall enough. Mm-hmm. I think if he were fighting in today's world, he would really, really be a heavyweight champion. But in those days, Muhammad Ali was quicker. He was faster. He was taller. And Jerry cut each time. And that's what most of the time stopped the fight. He didn't get knocked out, but it was a technical cut above his eyes, and they would stop the fight.
Now, you were there when he was probably from like the mid-period of his career toward the end. It had to be hard. It has to be hard to be a fighter's wife, to see your man being beaten in the ring. How do you deal with that?
Well, I had never been around anything like that, and one time he was fighting in Las Vegas, and they said when he knocked the guy out right in front of me, I screamed so loud. I was being interviewed, and I screamed so loud that I just about blew the whole mic. So that'll just give you an idea how I felt. It was very traumatic. Wow. Very traumatic for me. People magazine followed me around and did an article right before the Frasier fight. And they took pictures of me. I was going everywhere and they were taking pictures. And then they actually took pictures of me at the fight. And I thought for sure Jerry was going to win. And when he lost, I just crumbled. I couldn't stop crying for like 5 days.
That was his big comeback, wasn't it?
Yes, that was his comeback. Correct. And, wow. You know, it just wasn't to be. But he was a great, great man, great power, and just got mixed up in the wrong things, unfortunately.
And you were married for a number of years.
7 years. Wow. 7 years.
And then Jerry sadly succumbed to, I don't know what it's called.
Pugilistica dementia.
Thank you. From being hit so hard in the head. And a lot of fighters suffer from
yes.
that.
Yes. His brain actually turned into sugar. Wow. And was dissolving. And I spoke to him before he passed away. And I said, "Hi, champ, how you doing?" "I'm fine. I'm keeping it on, keeping it on." And just 2 weeks later, he passed away. And I called his family and his mom. And she asked if I would please come out to California for the funeral. So I did. And I sat with the family at the funeral, and she said something that I will never forget. She said, "You know, he only remembered two things here at the end. Didn't remember his kids, didn't remember anything. He only remembered you and Elvis." So how about that on the legacy?
Wow.
That was kind of neat.
Now, how did you meet Jerry Corey? How do you go from being an Elvis girl in a movie and doing all these wonderful pop culture things to getting into the fight game?
I was doing a television show at the time on Channel 13 in Los Angeles called Telefun. And he was in Palm Springs at a golf tournament. And he went to visit some friends of mine. And she was watching me on TV that night. And he said, "Oh, wow, who's that?" And she said, "Well, that's my girlfriend." He said, "Well, I'd love to meet her." So she called me at the station. She said, "Well, somebody would like to meet you." I said, "Oh, no, he's married. I don't want to meet him." You know, so mm-hmm. it was kind of funny. But she said, no, he's getting a divorce. So I went out to Palm Springs and I met him. And we started to go out and had a short relationship before we got married. But he had lost to Ali and he'd given up his career. And then I said, "Well, come on, you can still do it, but you have to get out of California. You have to go to New York." So I talked him into going to New York to resume his career and to get a new manager, because at that time he was still being managed by his dad and Johnny Flores. And okay. So I said, "I think you just need to get all of this behind you." And that's what he did. We went to New York. He got Gil Clancy, and Gil whipped him into shape, and he started his comeback.
And for a while in between, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, he also got into the rock and roll game. He was working with Three Dog Night.
Yes, he was. That was before. That was before I met him.
Okay. I was wondering if maybe your connections through the Elvis and rock world did that.
No, that was before I actually met him, that he worked with Three Dog Night. He respected them. And I don't know if you know this, Jerry actually recorded a couple songs.
I didn't.
And he really had a good voice. He did a couple gigs in Hawaii. And he was really, really going to try to pursue that. But boxing was his first love, so he continued to follow that career instead.
Did any of his stuff ever get released? Is it somewhere in a vault?
I have a couple tapes of it.
Okay.
But he had a good voice. He sounded a lot like Elvis, surprisingly. Excuse me.
He was a good-looking man, too.
Thank you.
I mean, that sounds weird saying, but he was. I used to work in the teen idol business, and he was teen idol handsome.
Yes, he was.
You always get the good-looking ones. You do. So, Jerry, you had your life with Jerry, and then things changed again, and you came back to Indiana.
Correct.
And this newfangled thing came along called the Internet. And you started getting into Facebook and emails and all this stuff. And suddenly, you started thinking about the past. And this band called Dave Clark 5. And we'll pick that story up after this.
That I should care about you. I love you.
Clark Five, Because, one of the best love songs of the 1960s, the British Invasion era, and that features Mike Smith singing lead, and Mike Smith wrote that, I just discovered.
Yes, he wrote that song, gave it to a friend. The friend turned around, sold it to Dave Clark for a few dollars. Dave Clark took the credit.
Wow.
And then Mike recorded it, but... Mike never got the credit for writing that song. Is that crazy?
That is crazy.
Yeah, a bit crazy.
Wow. Let's pick up the story. We talked about in the beginning of the interview, and we got about 10 minutes left here, that you were Miss Indiana. You went to California. You started hobnobbing with all these famous folks and doing television and films. You went to your first concert ever. It happened to be Dave Clark Five. Somebody brought you backstage. You fell in love with this handsome man, and his name was Mike Smith. Now, you dated a little bit.
Correct.
And then you lost touch.
We dated 64 and 65.
Oh, well, that's more than a little bit then.
A little bit.
Okay.
But see, he was on seven world tours, and I was trying to resurrect a career, so it was a difficult time. But he came to Chicago. I don't know if you remember, they played McCormick Place.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my mom to meet him. And I thought, oh, boy, I don't know about this. But I took her, and we're backstage, and the entire auditorium was blackened. And then the music starts with Peter Gunn, bum, 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 bum. And slowly but surely, the platform comes up, and there they are. And kids are screaming and yelling, and the flash bulbs, oh, my gosh. Madness. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, maybe I shouldn't have brought Mom. And I look over, and my mother's screaming with the kids. And I just went, wow, okay, Mom. You know, and so that was a bit funny. Afterwards, we went back to the hotel, and I introduced her and that. And coming back home, my mom said, he's a heartbreaker. Are you crazy? How do you think you're going to keep someone like that? What's the matter with you? So, you know, being a good girl, I listened to my mom kind of when we drifted apart. Mm-hmm. It was never an argument. His parents asked me to come over and live in England, and there was no way I was going to be able to do that,
right.
Even though I was in my 20s. Uh-uh. No, you listened to your mom and dad. You didn't do things like that back then. So we just drifted apart.
And then all this other stuff came in between.
Right.
Late 60s came, 70s came, Jerry came into your life. We get into the 80s and the 90s, and now the 2000s are starting. And somewhere along the line between the 90s and the 2000s, you reconnected.
1998, I moved back to Indiana from California. And I was going through some books, and a friend of mine saw some pictures of us. And she said, well, what happened to him? I said, I don't know. Well, where is he? I don't know. Have you ever heard from him or anything? No, no. Well, she got online, because I'm not computer smart at all. And she wrote to a fan club, and lo and behold, she said, I have someone that is trying to get in touch with Mike Smith. So the narrator said, well, so are a million other girls, you know. So she wrote back and said, well, no, this person dated him, and she really is. And her name is, and they gave Arlene Charles. And so luckily, the president of the fan club said, no, I recognize that name from seeing them in articles and that. So he contacted Mike. And Mike said, oh, yes, I know who she is. I remember her. Give her my number. Give her my email. Here's, yes, yes, yes. So they called me. I'm living in Valparaiso. And they said, well, guess what? You better get over here quick. We just got an email from England, and he remembers you and wants to get in touch. That was in 1998. And I went over. He called me for the first time Valentine's Day, and I thought he was kidding. When the phone rang, I answered it, and I said, somebody's playing a joke. And I said, is it really you? And he goes, is it really you? And I said, okay. We used to have a password. What kind of cologne did you wear when we were dating? Now, what man would remember that?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
No. Well, maybe, not.
What did you wear?
I used to wear Pierre Cardin.
Oh, okay.
Back in the 70s, that was the one.
Okay, that was the one. Okay. But this was the 60s. He wore English leather.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you're right, it's you. So we started talking, and from Valentine's Day on, we talked consistently every single day. And then I went over to see him, and I was going to try to get him back with his girlfriend that he had broken up with. And he said he didn't want to do that. And the more we saw each other, the more we spoke on the phone, we got together.
And you wound up getting married a few months down the road?
We moved to Spain, and we got married in 2001.
Wow. And his career was resurrecting. He had the Rock Engine Project, which brought you back here
to Star
the Star Plaza,
Plaza
Theater.
Right.
And it was such a great project, and he was very excited. I remember when I interviewed him for that and met you for the first time. Mm-hmm. And then Dave Clark 5 was nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but somewhere in between, Mike had an accident. He fell and injured his spine.
Correct.
And that kind of ended his performing.
You know what was amazing, Tom? He knew that he was going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he was so excited about that. Right before that, we had a manager in New York who said, listen, it's going to be the 40-year anniversary of the British invasion. We really need you to come back to America. So I came back to Indiana to find a home for us, and I found a real nice house out in La Porte, and he just said, if you like it, go ahead and buy it. So we put the contract in. Everything was fine. And then we went back and started moving all of our furniture back to America because we were going to come back to La Porte and live so that he could resurrect his career. Well, unfortunately, his son passed away first. So that was devastating. His son was only 21, and he drowned in Dahab, Egypt. So we pulled out of the contract. And then a month later, he said, no, we really need to concentrate and go forward. So he sent me back to the States here to put that home under contract once more. While I was back here, that I arrived on a Friday night, Saturday morning, the police came to my friend's door, knocked on the door and said, is Mrs. Smith here? And I went to the door. It was about 8 a.m. and I said, I'm Mrs. Smith. He said, you've got to call home. Your husband's had a terrible accident. And I was shocked. I had just been with him not even 24 hours ago. And so I called home, and he had been climbing a security fence in our backyard, and he fell almost 7 feet and broke his neck in 3 places.
Wow.
And from that accident, he was paralyzed from his upper waist down. He never regained any feeling back.
And that eventually led to pneumonia,
correct? Well, he was in a hospital for 5 years in England at Stoke Mandeville Hospital. And we ended up selling our home in Spain. We did not go through with the purchase of the home here in La Porte. But we, you know, continued to pick up pieces, and we were planning on coming back for the induction. And then he passed away.
Right before the induction.
Yes.
Wow. At least he knew he was inducted.
Oh, he was so excited about that.
Well, Charlie, I would love to have you come back if you can and join us when
love to.
We have Donnie here, and we have Kay Lips here, and we'll talk more about Elvis. But right now, let's remember Mike Smith. And as I mentioned, he had a great project that he was getting started again called The Rock Engine. And this one is called You Gotta Play Rock and Roll. And indeed, we do.
Why, she was sweet 16, my teenage dream, when I saw her at the corner store. But I felt so shy. Told me it was Peggy Sue. And he
your Saturday night, there's one thing you gotta do. You gotta play rock and roll, fast or slow, to win her home. Always gotta be rock and roll, I make it clear right from the start. She don't like country music, well that just ain't her style. Fast or slow, it's gotta be rock and roll. It's so much of the to a dance on a Saturday night, and introduce her to some friends of mine. They got a real good band playing old time jazz down at 5th and 49. She said, hey boys, you look real cool, but your music don't make me move. I'm sweet 16 and I wanna dance, so give me that backbeat groove. You gotta play rock and roll, fast or slow, to win my heart. Full of rock and roll songs. I listen real good and practiced real hard. I can see where Peggy is coming from. So me and my guitar went back to the bar. I said, boys, you better get wise. Well, Peggy walked in and I began to play. She could hardly believe her eyes. I was playing rock and roll, fast or slow. I stole her heart. Don't cramp my style.